for fun, I sew. It used to be my job, but now I just do it for fun. Mm-hmm. I made a silly little hood that it's Gollum, but made out of fleece.
Okay.
And his head is attached to a scarf, and he has the eyes and the ears and the hair. And it's he looks like a Muppet. It's very silly.
That's awesome.
But I made him and I'm wearing him. Christine's taking a picture.
Getting a picture for proof.
Proof I did this.
Yeah.
So the reason I made this is because somebody commissioned me to make a onesie. A Gollum onesie.
Oh.
A Gollum onesie. That's awesome.
And he was like, I want it to be tight. I want it to look like my skin. But like, you know, it's a onesie. So we were making it out of fleece. And it just looked like a dirty Muppet. But it looked really good. It looked really good. It was really funny. But yeah, that has nothing to do with plants.
I mean, that's probably a way to tie it in, right?
Yeah, Gollum likes potatoes, right? Potatoes?
And potato is a plant.
Ooh, and I was growing plants this summer. I grew some potatoes outside in the backyard. I still haven't eaten them. Is that bad?
Are they still good?
I'm not.
Are they still out there?
No. They're inside. They're in a bowl. I just haven't, done anything.
If they're not mush, yeah, they're fine.
No, they are. I know. It's January. This is pathetic.
I mean, potato, they're hardy.
It's like onions.
Fine.
Yeah, as long as they're not mushy and gross, you're good.
I know. That's how I do my food. Well, I think we should talk about plants. Welcome to Rough Around the Hedges podcast.
Hello.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kaylin.
And I'm Christine.
And today we have Tyler joining us. Tyler Thrasher.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. So, Tyler, will you give everybody a two-sentence intro about yourself, quick?
Two sentences, quick. my name's Tyler Thrasher. I am a self-taught artist, chemist, botanist, professional tinkerer, and I do all kinds of... Am I allowed to curse on this?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I do all kinds of crazy shit. that's kind of my job. It's hard to describe everything I do. I just kind of get fascinated with things, and then I just fucking do them.
Yeah.
I love it. So I know I've been following you for probably, I don't know, 4 years.
Amazing.
I found you because I saw somebody... I think it was the terrarium shop in Denver was selling your Grow a Damn journal. And I was like, oh my God, I need one of those. Cause I was just writing all my plant stuff down on legal paper and punching holes in it and throwing it in a three ring binder.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is a book. Yeah. This is perfect.
Whatever works.
I mean, they both work. They're both great. I love the organization of the book though. So that just stroked my OCD.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Yeah. I made that I made the Grow a Damn journal right before the pandemic hit. I had this idea to make a book that kind of served as your personal plant Pokedex. Mm. So I'm a huge Pokemon nerd too. And I was like, I want there to be a sort of tome or catalog for plant people to document all of their plants, keep track of them, yada, yada. And the pandemic hit and I was like, I thought it was going to be a bust. I was like, no one's going to buy this. Why did I waste my time making this? And then it turns out everyone got into plants during the pandemic and we ended up selling close to 10,000 copies.
Oh, wow.
Well, two of them are at my house.
Yeah.
One's here somewhere.
You have one too?
Yeah.
Nice. I had to get some for my outside plants.
Oh, sure.
I grow a lot of tiny weird things and I hybridize plants. So I was like, I really need a way to document this stuff, keep track of it. And that's kind of the book kind of came from a necessity that I personally had.
I love it. So if you guys don't know about the Grow a Damn journal, it's if you open a book, it's two pages. It has on one side, it has a little spot where you can draw a picture, a little sketch of the plant, and then write the names of the plant and then care. And then it has a cool little section where for the whole year, you can keep track of notable moments,
mm-hmm.
like baby's first year. So if your plant gets mature and it starts blooming in this month, you write it down. And then, next year you can look back and see what happened. And it's so cool. And it's so organized.
Thanks.
Oh, I love it. Anyway. That was how I was introduced to you. And so I started following you on Instagram, and then you do all this other cool shit.
Yeah.
And the things that stand out in my mind, you do sport Monstera hunting. So like going out to Home Depot and knowing what to look for to find some kind of sport variegation on their little forest of Monsteras.
Yeah.
And then I know you have the dwarf rare succulents, and you've, pollinate. There you go. I was thinking the wrong P word.
Hybridize.
Yes.
Hybridize. Yeah.
Yes. And that's kind of like our friend and co-host Mackie. He's doing that with Haworthias. He's going nuts on Haworthias and aloes. We think that's great, but also the thing that stands out in my mind that I always remember is the plant you made that you call Susan's pubes.
Susan's pubes. Yeah. So yes, I made this Crassula. That's a hybrid between Crassula Susanae, which is this lovely, compact, sort of geometric green Crassula. It looks like if you were to take a radiating star and scallops and combine it. I don't know. It's a really strange one. I hybridized that with a Crassula pubescens, which again is a very small, compact clustering Crassula that's purplish red and has fuzzy leaves. It's pubescent. And I hybridize these two. And there aren't, as far as I know, many or hardly maybe any Crassula hybrids that use pubescens as one of the parents. So that was really exciting to have a successful germination with pubescens. And I was like, well, am I going to name this? And I was like, I'll name it Susan's Pubes. to be fair, I did not choose this. My audience was like, oh, you should name it Susan's Pubes. and I was like, okay. Well, I reached out to this journal where I publish my hybrids through normally, and they were like, you can't call it Susan's Pubes. I never was actually going to. It would have been disrespectful to the woman that Susanae was named after, and I was like, I knew this was short-lived. I was never going to name it Susan's Pubes. So now I'm at this crossroads where I'm like, okay, what do I name this Crassula hybrid that, as far as I know, it only exists in my greenhouse, and I don't have a name for this hybrid. So I'm probably going to take a poll online and just see what people think I should name it.
At least you tried with the Susan's Pubes so that the internet can't come back to you and be like, well, you didn't name it Dish.
Yeah, right. I tried.
Okay, so on the topic of the Crassulas, we are going to be talking about rare dwarf succulents. So,
yes.
Is that a rare dwarf succulent, or is that just a succulent?
So, you know, succulents encompass a lot of different genera. There are, of course, in my opinion, rarity only exists under like one of two conditions. If it is endangered in habitat, it's rare, and you nor anyone else has any business owning it. If it is slow growing and hard to access in cultivation, it's also rare. However, in both instances, that plant should no longer be rare. If it is endangered in habitat, then we should be taking as many efforts possible to help sustain those populations, maybe even investing in tissue culture protocols that will further propagate that plant. If it's in cultivation, eventually it won't be rare. Maybe it will take a couple of decades, but that plant will probably get propagated enough that it is then no longer considered quote-unquote rare. So in all these different genuses, genera, there's rare exceptions. And that's kind of what I'm into, are the plants that are not cultivated very often, because I love to propagate and make more plants. So when I say like rare dwarf succulents, I'm really into the hard to come by, compact miniature versions of succulents.
Nice. I love tiny things.
Yeah. My wife's really into tiny things. We have like shelves and shelves of like just little tiny shit. I love tiny shit, including tiny plants.
Okay, so what are some of the, like, the genus that you grow?
Yeah, I grow a lot of Conophytum. Let's see. Conophytum, Lithops, Crassula, a lot of mesms. So mesms, that's an entire family that encompasses things like Glottophyllum, Gibeum, Conophytum, Lithops, Monolaria. I'm throwing out a bunch of names, and I would just urge your listeners to Google them while I am saying them, because they're all really cool plants. I'm really into mesms. That's M-E-S-E-M-B-S. And those are the genera. My favorites are Crassula and Conophytum.
I know about the Conophytums because we have a local greenhouse up here, properly propagated. They grow a lot of Conophytums, and then they list them on their eBay and auctions. And so I always go and look at the fancy ones that they're selling. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to check them out.
Yeah, it's properly propagated.
Okay, hang on. Give me 1 second to write that down. Because I will forget. I'm always looking for really unique collections or growers. You know, I'm always looking for something different. And it's always really fun to hear about other people who are into the really weird plants you're into. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have run into this, but I often find that there are people who specialize in plants. So you're mentioning a friend of yours that cross-pollinates Haworthia, and I know people who grow Haworthia, and they're Haworthia people. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they don't grow many things besides Haworthia, and I am a Crassula and Conophytum guy. And so I find that people tend to just pick a thing or a very narrow range of things mm-hmm. when it comes to plants, and they just kind of go hog wild with them.
Oh, that's exactly Mackie right now.
I was going to say, I'm very much a Hoya person. Kaylin does everything well, honestly.
I have, like, you know, my five favorite of each of the main aroid genuses, and that's kind of, I'm capping myself at 100 plants, so, like, I'm not trying to go crazy on one specific thing anymore.
Yeah. Right.
I got really into the aroids, and mostly the sport variegated Monstera. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, like, accidentally started this sport hunting frenzy whenever aroids were really blowing up during the pandemic. I was sharing this one sport I had that is now known as the Thrasher sport, and people freaked out. I had people messaging me daily, like, hey, can I get a cutting? Can I get a cutting? Can I buy a cutting? And I was really overwhelmed with the interest. And I had people like, I'll pay you $6,000 for a cutting.
Jeez.
And
wow.
Yeah, it got wild. And it got to a point where I was like, okay, look, like, I'm not trying to, like, make bank on this plant. I'm not trying to do that.
And this is from one single plant, right?
Yes, it was one variegated Monstera. I bought this pot of Monstera at a nursery, and there was one little plantlet in there that had a white stripe on the leaf. And I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. So I bought it and propagated it for years and years. I've sold probably I've gifted and traded a lot of cuttings to try to get my plant in as many homes as possible. Probably close to 80 cuttings from this one. And yeah, you know, I was like, I'm going to publish and make a sport hunting guide so I can help other people find their own sport mutations. And I've had some really, really interesting results. I've had people who have gone to Home Depot or their local nursery and have found some incredibly weird Monstera. Some really fascinating things.
Do you have a database for everyone to share their weird Monsteras?
I do. I'm not as active on it just because I have, like, 1,000 projects. And I was like, okay, the reality is, yes, there should be a database. And I started it. And then I was like, well, shit, people were messaging me, emailing me their like, updated images of their plants. There wasn't a way for people to, like, upload their own images. And so I was like, I don't have the time to keep up with something like this. And plus, you know, I was just like, with social media, people can just do it on their own. But I did start a database, and I was really on it. And then you know, I don't know. I also run a small business and have a family and kids I try to be very, very present with. And so I was like, some things have to give.
Yeah. You can almost do it like a self-editing Wikipedia too. Let everyone, I mean, that could get messy, but
yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes. And then I, you know, one of my things is I've personally pulled a little back from the like Instagram online plant community.
Same.
I had to. There was so much drama.
Yes. Negativity and yeah.
It was horrible. It kind of for a while killed my love of plants. Like for me to share my plants and then to have people hound me, like, can I buy a cutting? Can I buy a cutting? Mm-hmm. And then I'd have some people buy cuttings. And then I would gift other cuttings, and then the people who bought cuttings would be really mad at me because I gifted cuttings, and I thought they thought I was diluting their quote-unquote investment. And so, yeah, I had people who were like, you're ruining my investment. And I was like, plants are not an investment, but to each their own. Yeah, so lots of drama, and I was just like, man, if I don't back out of this, it will kill my love of plants.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was realizing with social media that I was just not, I was not happy. I was always mad or jealous or, you know, some negative emotion. And I was like, let's just delete it off my phone. So I just deleted Instagram totally.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah, that's, it's hard too because I found myself frustrated with the people who would share their plants and then brag about the pricing. The prices of their plants. And then you'd see what I'm just going to call just like you'd see these idiots that would like take out loans to buy a $15,000 plant.
Yikes.
And I'm like, yo, the second you do that, the second you buy a $15,000 plant, tissue culture labs are going to get their hands on one and they're going to make bank. And it's going to completely wreck how much money you spent on that plant. And that's exactly what happened.
Because they couldn't wait.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, like Monstera obliqua, Spiritus sancti. Mm-hmm. There are all these rare aeroids that if you had one, you were considered like plant royalty. Like it was like this big, you know, bragging right to be like, I have a Spiritus sancti. So people would drop 10 grand, 10 to 20 grand on one. And now you can buy cuttings for like a couple hundred dollars.
Or like, you know, a $50 Spiritus sancti.
Yeah, someone in our group was selling them for real cheap not too long ago, like $20.
Spiritus sancti. Oh my gosh. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. The little baby ones. The guy I think that Jen got her.
Oh, do you mean on the Facebook Marketplace? Yeah. What's his face down in Zimbrota or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Going back to this Thrasher sport real quick, just because I was unfamiliar with it. It is. I'm kind of obsessed with it, though. Have you seen it before, Kim?
Yeah.
It's really cool.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. And that's just from one leaf.
Yeah.
And
the variegation pretty, what's the word? Stable?
Yes and no. Mm. So what's weird about the Thrasher sport is it's capable of producing almost every kind of leaf pattern.
That's right.
It's made some of the weirdest patternings, and it's just different from leaf to leaf. It's very unpredictable, which is why I love it.
Yeah.
So I've tried stabilizing certain patterns, and it doesn't matter. The plant will just make whatever it wants.
Mm. Interesting.
So it's desirable in that regard, but also in some other regards, it makes it kind of less desirable because people want to stabilize a trait and this one just won't have it.
Well, that's like everyone, you know, when they were arguing, do you want the Tycon or do you want the Albo? And people are like, I want the Tycon because it's stable. But like, you know, there's something fun about it knowing, you know, every leaf is going to come out a little different.
Yeah.
I dig it. That's cool.
Yeah. So I've propagated this thing so many times and I've gotten so many weird patterns from it.
How many of them do you have at home right now?
Oh,
in separate pots,
probably like 20. Some of them reverted. So I either chop them up or toss them if they fully revert. I'm running out of room for plants. So I'm kind of brutal. Like I'm like also too. I'm running into this issue. I'll never buy plants from someone on Instagram ever again. I bought some plants from this plant fluencer on Instagram, and they told me, they're like, the plants are clean, like there's no pests.
Oh my God, let me guess, they had tons of pests.
Man, I didn't know. I bought what was left of their collection. brought it home and put them in my greenhouse. And like a month later, I was like, oh my God, where'd all these mealybugs come from?
Oh,
and
then
I looked at all the plants I had bought from them, and all of them were absolutely fucking covered.
Oh,
and
man.
Every plant I bought from them just rotted and died in like a few weeks after having bought them. And I was just like, oh my God, what is happening? And all the mealybugs spread to my entire aroid collection.
Oh.
So I had to toss half of my aroid collection, chop up even more, and just salvage what I could because I bought some person's plants on Instagram.
Dang.
So yeah, I'm kind of turned off on buying plants online right now because one bad plant can completely wreck your collection.
Right. No kidding. Did those come to you in the mail or did you pick them up?
I picked them up.
Okay.
And everything seemed good and cool. And then, yeah, it took a minute. I got home and then about a month later, I was like, what are these weird bumps?
Oh
that's
man.
Scale.
Oh, it was more than one kind of pest?
Yeah, it was scale and then mealybugs. And
yikes.
I my gut wasn't saying anything at the time. I bought the rest of their collection and was the biggest mistake I'd ever made in terms of plants.
We've seen some of that in our local. So we're in Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul of Minnesota. We've seen that in our local plant community too, where, you know, this person sells one of our friends a plant with spider mites, or this person sells a bunch of plants on a purge. And then all of a sudden, oops, hey everybody, my plants have thrips. Anything you bought from me, you should quarantine. It's like,
or spider mites. It's like these come to mind immediately of like huge purges that happened. And then afterwards.
Oh, and then there was the whole flat mites thing with the Hoya lady. Yeah. So these are all just, you know,
local drama
things that have happened over here, but.
Yep.
Everyone the quarantine. Can't say it enough, everybody.
Yes. Yeah. That same thing's happening with the Tulsa plant scene, where the Tulsa has like two really big plant shops, and I guess both have a reputation of selling infested plants.
Mm.
And so there's just this kind of like small riot in the Tulsa plant scene where everyone's like, you know, don't fucking shop at these places. And there's all this drama now about people whose, you know, collections were infested because they went to one of the two big plant shops and picked up the wrong alocasia or the wrong this or that. Lots of drama in your local plant community.
We've also seen it with the plant shops here.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And they come with plants. Pests come with plants.
Right.
It sucks whenever you like have a lapse in your routine and then one thing can go haywire and all of a sudden you're not really caring for plants anymore. You're now trying to kill the pests, trying to kill your plants.
Right. Yeah.
Do you guys have a beneficial bug group down there?
Not that I've looked into. I don't know.
Start one.
Yeah. Up here we have a chapter of the DMV beneficials. And then we do like a group bug order. And so all the bugs go to Cat's house and then Cat splits them up into your individual orders. And then you go pick up your bugs every 2 weeks.
Nice.
Oh, God, I love it. It's so great.
Yeah, it's real nice.
Amazing. Yeah, I should probably look into starting something like that here.
I can pass the info on if you want to be just, you know, you could head up a chapter of the DMV beneficials because they have a couple. I think they have 9 across the country.
I'm not 100% sure.
They at least have 2 for sure.
Right.
I know they have more. But anyway, yeah, that would be super cool. And they kind of have everything all set up and the group pricing, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Like a bulk buy or
something.
Yeah.
Yeah. They already have the hookup. So you wouldn't even need to I was going to say attack. Attack's not the right word. Approach the bug people.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I did. Yeah.
We got off topic again. We're still talking about plants, though. That's good.
Yes. But, you know, like back to the tiny, tiny succulents.
While we were talking, I was scrolling through all the conified items on the Google images, and I liked them before, but I think I like them more now because, again, tiny things. They're just tiny little bubbles.
Yeah. It's hard to
cute
not.
Cute little blooms.
Yeah. Hard to not love conified them. You know, there's all these fun shapes. There's cube shapes. there's a, you know, a bunch of balls. Some of them are hairy, some of them are wrinkly, some of them are cone shaped, and they all kind of operate the same, mm-hmm. which is they actively grow during spring and winter, fall, I guess, fall to like late spring. And then during summer, they start to go dormant. And that's when they conserve whatever few resources they have, and they shrivel up and they look dead. They completely shrivel up. And there are people who are guilty of throwing their conifidium away during summer thinking they're dead when they're actually just dormant. And then fall comes and you start watering your conifidium again, and then they burst out of their dry papery sheaths and they restart the process over and over, slowly forming larger and larger clumps with each new year.
Do they have a strict watering schedule like Lithops?
Yes. So you do not water your conifidium when they're dormant for a couple of reasons. One, you can rot them if you're not careful. Two, when they're dormant, you don't want to wake them up because... Say you have a collection of conifidium and you're like, I'm going to water them all at the same time. Well, if you water them during the summer, some are more susceptible to waking up early than others. So say you have two or three that decide to wake up a month early. Well, now you have to regularly water them during the hot months or they'll die. But while you're watering them, you may accidentally keep watering ones that do not want to wake up yet, and you'll rot those out. So it's just best to not water any of your conifidium during the hottest months of the year. And then from that point, you know, you can water them regularly starting in like September till like mid-April is kind of my routine.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm looking at the Crassula rabbit hole.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
How many different species of the conifidium do you think you have?
Oh my God.
Like, we talking like 50, 150, 500?
So, in terms of, oh my gosh, I don't even know how to, because I just teamed up with a lady that does conifidium, her and her husband, and I bought two clones of every species she had.
Wow.
Let's see, it was like three batches of like, oh, it's no joke. I probably bought, oh, is that correct? With including subspecies and a few hybrids, probably close to 120 species alone from this one grower.
Dang.
And I had my own. I couldn't tell you how many species I have. I know I have well over 400 individual conifidium plants.
Wow. Are you able to grow year round outside?
No, I have a greenhouse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I won't put them outside. Squirrels and mice love them. They'll eat them up. The sun will be too harsh. So I have a greenhouse that has an aluminum shade cloth. I say cloth. It's aluminum shade, like blinders kind of.
Oh, okay.
And that helps filter out a lot of the harsh sunlight. So I grow them entirely in my greenhouse. I won't move them outside.
Is your greenhouse full yet?
No, it's not. No.
Well, it helps you have smaller plants than I would. So
that's true.
I do grow mostly tiny plants in the greenhouse. I did convert my garage into a tropical greenhouse. So I have all my aroids and stuff out in the garage.
Wow.
But my greenhouse is not full, but I do have, I couldn't even tell you, like, maybe 600 to 700 plants out there, probably closer to 1,000, and they're all tiny. I could probably fit 5,000 more plants in my greenhouse. I'm just kind of taking it very, very nice and slow.
Man, I'm so jealous. But I don't grow tiny plants, so yeah. I'd be screwed anyway.
When did you start growing plants?
I grew up with plants.
Okay.
So my dad was a landscaper and we spent a lot of time in gardens and doing our own home and garden tours.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really into cacti because my dad would drag me to Home Depot and there was a small cactus section. And I remember seeing my first cactus when I was like maybe 6 years old. And I was like, what the fuck is that? My dad's like, that's a cactus. And I said, I have to have it. So we had this pattern of my dad would drag me to Home Depot. I would walk for an hour around the store and he'd let me pick out a cactus. And I just absolutely fell in love with them.
Do you have any of those still?
No. So what are they called? It's those really tacky ones. It's the grafted,
like the moon ones. Moon,
yeah.
Cactus? Yeah.
I loved those as a kid. I don't love them now, but I lost my love for plants when I was a teenager, went to college, and I found succulents in college. And I was like, oh my God, what are all these weird shapes and colors and patterns and all these like fun, juicy plants? I had never seen these before. And I was like, oh my God, these are succulents. They're kind of like cacti, but without the spines. I love these. Mm-hmm. And I went down a succulent rabbit hole. And then I started thinking like, well, I'm seeing a lot of the same plants at these stores. I want something a little different. So I started Googling like unusual succulents. I was like, oh my God, holy shit, there are some weird plants out there. And then that started this fascination with rare succulents. And then from there, it's all history. It just became a full-on obsession.
And then I guess as far as hybridizing and stuff, was that just a natural, I guess it's a natural progression, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you said you're like a scientist at heart. So like, obviously you're going to want to start to see what you can do to, I always say break plants, but like, you know, see what you can do next.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, once you start collecting as many plants as you can, then you start seeing a lot of those plants, you know, online and other people's collections, you start asking yourself, well, what haven't I seen yet? And the answer to that question is, oh, hybrids. Or you go to habitat and discover new plants. But there's some murky waters there, in my opinion. I think a lot of other people's opinions, where if you are a hobbyist or an amateur, you might not have the right to go into habitat and start like tromping around and looking for new plants. And then who gets to propagate them? Who gets to take them home? Should anyone take them home? So the next answer in my book for me was, oh, I'll hybridize plants. Mm-hmm. I'll make my own plants. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did.
So how many do you have? How many have you made so far?
I have a few. So I have the Crassula thrashula, which was my first hybrid.
I love that.
I wanted to name it Crassula Nova after my oldest son, Nova. Mm-hmm. But then I was told you can't use the Latin language for a human-made plant. So I couldn't use Nova. So I was like, well, I'll name it Crassula thrashula. That's pretty stupid. and they took it. They said, cool. And I said, wait, what? And they're like, yeah, we'll call it Crassula thrashula. so there's that. And then I have a Ceraria hybrid I made. So Ceraria are really fun. They're these really fun, juicy leafed succulents that can be trained kind of like a bonsai. They're very slow growing, and I took a Ceraria namaquensis, which forms these sprawling branches of tiny, tiny leaves, like thousands of tiny leaves, and crossed that with a Ceraria pygmaea, which looks like a tiny tree. So it looks like a little tiny, tiny, tiny dwarf tree with like fat, juicy leaves. Mm. And both of them flowered, and I noticed that the ants were going around one of the flowers. And I was like, oh, these guys love the nectar. They love whatever is happening in the flower. So I put both of them side by side, and I just let the ants go from flower to flower and cross-pollinate for me.
Oh, I love that. Nice.
Then there's Crassula Susan's pubes, which I can't name Susan's pubes. and then I have two other hybrids that are currently at the seed stage, the seedling stage. So I won't know if they're true hybrids for another 2 years or so.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Because you get the seeds to germinate and then you're growing them out and then you're looking at the characteristics.
Yep. And a lot of those characteristics aren't obvious.
Right away. Know.
Yeah, they're not. Especially when they're really tiny succulents, and the succulents already take a long time to grow. So you just add all this together and It takes a long time before you can say definitively that something is a hybrid.
Is that how you kind of go about deciding to hybridize stuff? Is you see two characteristics in plants that you would like, that you're like, oh, I want those together, or try to get them together?
Yeah. I mean, it's that and, okay, what do I have flowering right now?
Oh, sure. Let's just see.
These ones are flowering. Yeah, there are some crassula I would love to cross-pollinate, but in my habitat and my environment, they do not flower at the same time.
Oh, sure.
So
can you?
It's tough.
Can you freeze pollen like anthurium, or is that hard?
You can. I've tried, but it's already really difficult to cross-pollinate crassula.
Sure.
They're really tiny flowers, and so I have to use like a beard hair to get in there and like get the pollen. They're very tiny flowers, and it's a very delicate process. So it's like freezing them adds this whole other layer.
Sure.
That I should try, but I have very little faith it would work.
Do you have a cat?
So I don't, but that's another trick.
Yeah. People cat whisker. Cat whiskers.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's my cat.
Yeah, I have two cat whiskers in my plant supplies drawer.
Nice.
Yeah. For me, I have a lot of philodendrons that are blooming at any given time, but like I have two Haworthia, and they don't bloom at the same time, and I only have one aloe now, so like I don't have anything to cross, but I could do begonias.
I've never crossed a begonia. That could be fun.
Our friend Simone actually crossed begonias.
Oh, nice.
And she wants to name it after her kitty.
Nice.
Her blind deaf kitty. Yeah, I just... For philodendrons, like I don't want to get up at 3 a.m. to collect pollen and pollinate stuff. I think it's a time of day specific. I haven't like super looked into it, but I've looked into it enough that I know I'm like, I just want to walk out there and pollinate it. I don't want to have to get up at 3 a.m. to do it.
Cool. Yeah, I have yet to see the Thrasher Monstera flower.
Mm-hmm.
I don't let it ever get big enough to do that. I'm always chopping it.
What size do the leaves get on that one? Is it kind of like the Borsigiana where they stay like 20 inches, or do they get huge. A Tycon?
They get huge.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Sorry, which one are we talking about?
The Sport.
Oh, okay.
Sport Monstera.
Nice.
Yeah, the Thrasher Monstera, the leaves, like full size.
Wow.
Yeah, they get quite large.
What is your favorite conophytum at the moment?
I have a few. My top three... are Conophytum stephanii, which is very small. It's one of the smallest Conophytum species, and they form these clusters of tiny hairy balls, which I love. and Conophytum cubicum, which form these cube-shaped leaves, and then Conophytum angelicae, which also forms a sort of cubish-shaped leaf, but they're super wrinkly, and they're very strange.
Ooh, do the cubicum, is it when they sun stress they get pink?
Yes.
Pink ones.
Kaylin's really into pink plants.
I love pink plants. It's a problem.
No, I get it. One of my other favorite, well, I guess, like I was saying, Crassula pubescens gets a nice, like, not magenta. What's the color I'm looking for?
Like fuchsia?
Yeah, like a fuchsia, like a reddish pink color when it gets a lot of light.
Mm. Love it. I love it.
How do you, I guess, determine? We always like question here, like, what is a rare plant? So when you're saying growing rare dwarf succulents, is it an availability thing? Is it just a price thing? Is it only one person's been allowed to take this out of, nature thing? Because like with Hoya, a lot of folks are importing from other countries. And so I know there are sellers in the US that are like, I have the only one in the US right now. I'm only allowed to sell, so many at a time. And that's what kind of drives the Hoya market as far as rare goes. What drives the succulent market?
And there's a few things. One of them is the fact that they are readily poached, which is really depressing. You'll see these like hauls online where someone went to Southern Africa and went on property or land, and they just poached these like really old very mature Conophytum clumps or Crassula or Mesums, mostly Conophytum, and they just poach the hell out of them.
Right.
And so they're rare in the sense that they are critically endangered in habitat.
Gotcha.
And they're very slow growing in cultivation, and not many people know how to grow them.
Right.
So Conophytum people know how to grow Conophytum. I know, from my experience, people who specialize in, say, Adenium or Horthia or Cacti, they don't really fuck around with Conophytum. and so it's, but they're, you know, they can be propagated. And if you know how, it's not hard. Mm-hmm. I just think it's like a lack of resources and knowledge. And not enough people know about Conophytum. I strongly believe that if more people knew about Conophytum, more people would be buying them. So the people who are buying them are collectors who are willing to pay a pretty penny.
Sure.
So, yeah, there are things that define a rare plant. I, however, feel like if a plant is rare, it probably shouldn't be. Like, the goal should be to make enough of it that it can survive itself. Mm-hmm. And so there should be clones of this plant in more than one greenhouse. And if it's endangered, we need to be making more and investing in maybe seed banks or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have all the people who are going to be like, but no, that'll tank my value.
Yeah, my yes. margins.
Yep. Yep. I've butt heads with a lot of people in the plant community that have had that mindset. And I'm just like, fuck your investment. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what it's about. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to invest in something, like fucking get a Roth IRA or something, not not a plant that can be propagated a million times.
Right.
I agree with you on the whole, you know, if it's rare in nature, we should be making as much of it as possible. And I was never the person who was like, oh, here, I'm going to spend this much on a plant and turn around and make a bunch of money. But like, I also refuse to spend more than like $25 on a plant.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just get all my cool stuff from trading and having friends and stuff. So like, you know,
yeah,
I have the cool stuff, but yeah. Like, you know, I didn't spend $15,000 on my collection.
Oh, hell no.
I was going to say a quote. I had a Conophytum question.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, I know. Oh, no. Okay, so you said they're hard to grow, but does most of it just come down to the dormancy and the watering period, or is there something else about them that makes them difficult for some people to cultivate?
I think it's mostly dormancy and water period. Conophytum can be grown on a windowsill. Like, they are not very picky when it comes to light. You just got to know when to water them. And I think if you don't know what you're doing, it's very easy for you to look at a Conophytum going dormant and say, oh, it's dying. And then you freak out and you just like, I mean, I can imagine the scenario where you think it's dying. So you amp up your watering and fertilizer. Right. You pull out everything you can, and you don't know that the plant's actually asking you to fuck off and
leave it alone.
Yeah. And so if you don't, you kill it.
Right.
And I think if you don't know what you're doing, I mean, I was talking to someone a few years ago who got really into Conophytum from like Etsy and like pictures on Pinterest. They bought a lot of Conophytum. They didn't know much about them. And so all fall and winter, they're like, oh my gosh, these are so cool. Spring came around. They thought their Conophytum were dying. So they tossed them in the trash.
And like just waking up.
They were just going to sleep.
Oh, right. The other way. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They were very disheartened to learn that their plants are actually perfectly healthy. They're supposed to look dead for like 4 months.
Right. You said they grow in windowsills. Are we talking like south still, or what kind of lighting do they really like?
I'm going to get it wrong. There was a blog I was really into a few years ago called Lithops Stories.
Okay.
And it was this grower, and they grew their entire mesum and adramiscus collection on a windowsill. And I want to say it was east facing.
Wow.
Yeah. I've heard people growing their Conophytum and stuff on just any windowsill. Ideally, your brightest windowsill. So, I mean, you know, depends on where you are on the globe, but yeah, I've heard many people grow Conifidum on windowsills and they do just fine.
Interesting. And they don't get super leggy or anything?
Conifidum, some do.
Okay.
Some can get leggy. Others, they won't put on the sort of coloring that you like to see.
Sure.
But I have had very few Conifidum get leggy on me.
Kind of silly. The little balls just getting
stretched
a little bit.
Yeah.
We totally glossed over mesms.
Oh, but yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, there's...
They're similar, too, because they have the dormancy, right?
Yes. Sometimes not as harsh. One that is similar but very different is Monolaria. So Monolaria are really cool. They have these trunks that will put out, like, this spherical head. Mm. And then from that head, they'll put out what people call bunny ears. And it's two leaves that will emerge from this head, so it looks like a peace sign or like bunny ears, and they're sparkling because they have what are called epidermal bladder cells, which are these exterior little bubbles that hold excess moisture, and they go completely dormant like from like mid-spring till early fall, and those little bunny ears will come like completely dry and shrivel up, and the plant will look absolutely dead. Not every mesm does this. Gabaeum don't do this. Argyroderma don't do this. Oh, what else is there? Lithops don't do this. Mm-hmm. Lithops, they'll just kind of look, they'll kind of go stagnant. Like you'll realize that they aren't responding to watering as readily. So they don't really perk up with water, and that's when you know, oh, they're going dormant. What other mesms? There's so many. Drosanthemum, Mitrophyllum are kind of like Monolaria. Mm. They have little bunny ears. Myrophyllum. Antimimas are a type of mesm. There are some Charadopsis that will go dormant and the other ones don't. Again, they just kind of stop responding to watering or they slow down. But yeah, not all of them look dead, but some of them do. And then some of them just kind of stall.
I had Lithops and oh my God, that was such a hard one. I'm like, I don't know what you want from me. And I know, and I know 9 times out of 10, it's leave it the fuck alone.
Yeah.
But I had it for over a year. I probably was overwatering it. I put it in a south window and it finally started to do, it started growing new leaves. Like it started like wrinkling up really hard and peeling back. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't kill it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lithops hard.
Lithops are hard. I think Lithops are harder than Conifidum because the visual cues aren't as prominent.
Right.
And Lithops, you can still technically water them during the summer.
Uh-huh.
I water mine. I just give them like a little splash, like maybe once a month I'll water them. But I do find Lithops to be much more difficult than Conifidum.
Mm. That makes me feel good.
Yeah. They're not easy.
I had to have the butts. I had to get some Lithops.
Yeah.
And I think I had 3 in my pot. One of them died right away. The other ones lived a while, but then like one day one of them was overwatered and one of them was like, oh, I'm fine. And then it was funny. The last one finally bit the dust. I totally forgot to water it, period. I didn't give it any water and then it just dried up. And I was like, what happened?
Yeah.
How did I let this happen?
Do you still have yours?
The Lithops? Mm-hmm. No. If I was going to get in, I love the way they look. Maybe I should get into Conifidums is really what I should do.
Try it.
Because I love the idea of Lithops, but like, I don't know. I just, when you only have one, it's hard to keep track of like, you know, when dormancy is happening because you just have the one plant and then like there's just too much stress. But like I had like 25 Conifidums. They wouldn't take up very much space. I could get more plants.
There you go.
I wouldn't have to pay attention to them for half the year. But maybe that's what I need next.
Yeah.
Forget these aeroids.
Yeah. I mean, once you start going down the Conifidum rabbit hole, it's hard to stop. I mean, there's so many varieties and yeah, you kind of fall in love, and then you're like, oh, I can grow these from seed. Mm-hmm. Then you start realizing, oh, you know, you could pay $30 for, like, a two-headed plant, or you could pay, like, $10 for 100 seeds.
Yeah. I think that's where Mackie's at now, too, is
yeah.
they grow a lot from seed.
Yeah.
I have a couple of them. My Dioscorea is from Mackie and my Dionodule.
Oh, right.
I love those guys.
Nice.
I feel like I need to get into Conophytums and I need more Hawaiians. That's what I've learned from this.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Cool. All right. Well, is there any other things that you want to mention about Dwarf Succulents? Otherwise, we can do our plant of the week.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think we covered a lot. You know, nice. I think if you're listening to this and you get the itch to get into some tiny, compact succulents, the one place I like to direct people is a wonderful nursery out in Belen, New Mexico, called Mesa Garden. And they specialized in all the plants I love to grow.
Nice.
I think Scott goes there. We have a local plant store called Fractal Cactus. And he goes out to New Mexico and Arizona every year and just gets a whole bunch of stuff and brings it back. I'm pretty sure Mesa Garden's one of them he goes to.
I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
We got to do our plant of the week. I have my plant of the week because I wrote it down and I sent it to Christine so I wouldn't forget. Mm. So this week, my plant of the week is my Florida Beauty, which is a propagation from Christine. And it finally, I don't know if you have this problem down in Tulsa, but when I put my aroids outside and then they're like they're like 4-inch pot size. Sometimes the philodendrons just don't want to. I don't know if they don't like the heat outside or if they don't like the sun, but this guy kind of struggled and didn't do much all summer in my greenhouse with I think I have a 50% shade cloth. But all of a sudden I put him inside, I put him under grow lights, and he's just like, oh yeah, I love this, I love this. And he puts out bigger leaves and better fenestrations. And now he just put out like, you know, a really nice, you know, 10-inch Florida Beauty leaf with fantastic variegation. So he's my plant of the week.
Nice.
Very nice. Mine, I think I'm going to do my Hoya sigillatus Borneo. It's Borneo is the like rounder leaf sigillatus. It's not as long leafed, but he's really taken off and he's super sun stressed right now and really purpley and really cool looking. And Kaylin's looking at him.
Yeah, I can see him. It looks like he's been powdered with like powdered sugar.
Oh yeah, because he's got splash too.
He's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess should I do a plant of the week as well?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, okay. Right now, all of my curly leafed bulbs are really popping off. So I would say my plant of the week is my Tracheondra tortilis, which puts out these fun little squiggly leaves from a tuber that mostly resides underground. And some of the weirdest looking leaves on any plant on the planet.
I love it.
Yeah, did you post those not too long ago on your Instagram?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking through them and I saw that reel and I was like, oh, that's a cool one.
Yeah.
Do they all kind of have the same funky leaf shape or do they vary?
The bulbs,
this specific species.
They all kind of vary. They're all very squiggly, but mm-hmm. some are squigglier than others. Some are taller. Some have more scrunchy squiggles. Yeah.
Scrunchy squiggles. I love it.
Scrunchy squiggles.
So is the care for these, you know, you water them when they're not dormant, and then you let them go dormant and you don't water them for a while?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Galen's making a little checklist.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to buy some of these bulbs.
Yeah, those are hard to find, so good luck.
And dang.
If you find a grower, let me know.
Nope.
Yeah, they look like that that hard candy. The ribbon one.
Oh. Yes, yes.
I want to put it in my mouth. Woo. Okay, now we can do what Christine was saying. Right. Tyler, tell everyone where to find you.
Yeah, you can find me anywhere. Instagram, Tyler Thrasher Art. I'm on Threads. I do stuff on Threads. I don't do a whole lot on Facebook. Fuck Facebook.
It's for the old people.
Yeah. My website's tylerthrasher.com. Yeah.
You have a good, you send out newsletters periodically.
I do newsletters.
You guys can sign up for the newsletters. I will.
Yeah.
I give it my seal approval because it doesn't come out enough to annoy me. And every time it comes out, there's something interesting in it.
Nice.
Yeah. I try to do it when we have like a big product drop or if I have like some fun thoughts to share, but like probably once a month I'll send something.
Yeah, it's a good email. Sign up for them.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Cool. Love it.
I was like, do we have anything else to add? And then folks, if you're listening, we do have a Rough Around the Hedges Discord server if you want to join a cool plant group. Have some online virtual friends.
All over the world, too.
Heck yeah. The link is in our Instagram stories. No,
it's highlights. It's just our Instagram highlights. The link may or may not be broken. I feel like every other time I check it, it's broken. Just message me if you can't get joined and I'll get you in there.
Yeah. So if you like to have virtual plant friends on the internet and share pictures of your plants, we have the Discord server. And then that's also where we post our plants of the week.
Yeah.
So nice. Come over and join. It's free. Cool. All right. Well, thanks. Oh, yeah. Thank you again, Tyler, for joining us. This was lovely.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm going to have to go. Next time we talk to you, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I have 50 items. Gosh darn.
I'll expect it.
Cool, cool. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us. And everybody, stay rough.
Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.